Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome once again. It is Thursday, and it's the Thursday edition of Jeremy Speaks on Everything. Of course, it is 6:30. I would like to say thank you to my listeners. I would like to welcome any new listeners to the program. I want to give out that call-in number, 347-994-3320. If you want to call in and discuss something, maybe a subject on one of my previous videos, maybe you want to talk about that. Find me on social media at Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm not that active on there. I'm on Twitter. I'm on social media a little bit, but most of the time I'm busy. Now, I would like to introduce to any new listeners, my scheduling for the show every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, with the exception of yesterday, of course. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I will be talking about the 33 dynasties of Egypt. I didn't do it yesterday because I was extremely tired and just kind of wanted to, I guess, relax for a day. Anyway, kind of pigged out a little bit too. Had some cheeseburgers. Normally, I eat eggs and beef jerky and drink water, but I felt like some grease and sugar yesterday. Then I fell asleep. But normally on Thursdays, I do have this opportunity that I like to extend to people so that they can call in, get something off their minds, maybe something they want to discuss. That number is, again, 347-994-3320. And you can listen to this. Blog Talk isn't the only place you can listen to these episodes that I have. You can listen to them on Podbean, Buzzsprout. I'm even posting the videos in part one and part two editions at the moment on YouTube. I'll share them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Yeah, you know, these are the places you can find episodes of Jeremy Speaks on Everything. The rundown. Oh, before I start the rundown, I would like to say, men of African origins who can hear my voice, let's start speaking to each other. It's only when we start speaking to each other and sharing information and knowledge where things will change in our favor. It might take a little while to get up that mountain, but we can get up that mountain together. And that journey starts by us speaking to one another. I challenge any of you to go out and speak to five other males of African origins today. I challenge you. Or maybe tomorrow you feel like doing it. But I'm going to continue to say this until people start showing, hey, I'm actually speaking to these people. These aren't just the people that I know on my Facebook. These are other people that I've added that I may not have talked to in years. So I'm going to speak to them. Anyway, I challenge you to do so. I want to give you the rundown for the show today. Of course, I've started the people or events that you may not know about your own history. Since I didn't do it yesterday, I do want to do the 5th and 6th dynasty, but I'm going to do it because I said I was going to do it and I didn't get it done yesterday. I'm going to finish. Consistency is the key to making this thing work. And if you want to stay consistent, you have to do the things you said you were going to do and meet the deadlines you said you were going to meet. So I am going to talk about the 5th and 6th dynasty today as well. And I also want to talk about two books that I read recently. I finished both of them recently. It's called, one of them is called Everyone is African, How Science Explodes the Myth of Race. That's going to be a juicy one. I promise you, if you don't know anything about it, it's going to be a juicy one. And On Tyranny. On Tyranny is a book by a guy named Timothy Snyder. It's called On Tyranny, Lessons from the 20th Century. And it deals with some things that show the digression from democracy into tyranny. Anyway, all of that is going to be on today. I do want to plug an episode that I recently did. It's called Jeremy Speaks on Us as a Trillion-Dollar Market, or the Trillion-Dollar Market That Is Us. I do have both of those uploaded to YouTube, where I go into the trillion-dollar African origin people in our consumer market, whether it was economic empowerment or economic dependency. I did go into that a little bit. So if you want to listen to that, listen to it and call me one of these Thursdays at 347-994-3320. Call me and let's discuss how your viewpoint may differ from mine. I just wanted to plug that video before I got into it. Now I'm going to get into it. First off, I want to start with a person, and I have a couple of them that I researched. I want to start with a person that is important to our history but doesn't get spoken about. His name is Benjamin Banneker, and he was a self-taught, free person of African origin who happened to be a mathematician, an almanac author, an astronomer, and a farmer. Now, for those who may not know what almanacs are, that's what people use to measure when to grow crops, things like that, you know, like sunlight, sunrise, what's the moon going to be. That's what an almanac was. And he was a farmer, which kind of goes hand in hand. At the age of 15, he took over the family farm and created an irrigation system to control the flow of water to the crops. Now, if you know anything from my 33 dynasties of Egypt, you will know that these people in Egypt 5,000 years ago also created irrigation systems. That's why Egypt was so bountiful with food, because the water was plentiful. They created tributaries and they created irrigation systems to control the flow of water to the crops. Now, I pointed that out to point out the fact that this must be something people that look like me just know how to do, I guess. Anyway, in the 1750s, he invented the first clock in America. It was this invention that put his talents on display for the country. He's responsible for surveying of the territory, for construction of the nation's capital in 1791 after the lead architect quit. Authored commercially successful series of almanacs. And he corresponded with Thomas Jefferson, who we all know loved him some. He loved women of African origin. He corresponded with Thomas Jefferson, the drafter of the United States Declaration of Independence, on the topics of slavery and racial equality. And we all know that the history books have documented that Thomas Jefferson loved racial equality, or he just liked splicing his organs into women of African origins. Anyway, that was Benjamin Banneker, for those who did not know. The next guy I want to talk about is a guy who was a Kenyan politician. His name was Jomo Kenyatta. He was Kenyan born. He became Kenya's first president and considered the founding father of the Kenyan nation. He led Kenyan African National Union, or KANU, delegation to the first and second Lancaster Conference in London, where Kenya's independence constitution was negotiated in 1960 and 62. These people basically had to go to London to negotiate their freedom in their own country. It seems like that's just something that I guess oppressed people just innately do. You know, they have to buck the system or buck the trends, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're always fighting up. Twice as hard, half the credit. We're always fighting up, you know? I fight the stereotype of us being lazy. I fight that every day. I saw an interesting picture that brought that up. I saw a picture that said that, and I hate to use the word, but I'm going to use it. It's almost like this is a curse word to me now. Black people have been stereotyped as lazy ever since we stopped working for free. Anyway, I'm back to Jomo. He supported reconciliation and consistently asked white settlers not to leave Kenya. His policy was that of continuity and gradual Africanization of the government, keeping many old colonial civil servants in their old jobs as gradually replaced by Kenyans. He also oversaw peaceful land reform processes, Kenyans' admission into the United Nations, and established institutions of independent Kenya. That was Jomo Kenyatta. Born in 1891 and he died in 1978. The third guy I want to talk about is Medgar Evans. And some of you may already be familiar with this American civil rights activist from Mississippi. He worked to overturn segregation at the University of Mississippi and enact social justice and voting rights. He was secretary for the now what we know as the NAACP. Worked on voting rights and registrations, economic opportunity, access to public facilities, and other changes within segregated society. He was murdered by Brian Della Beckwith, a member of the Ku Klux Klan. His murder and resulting trial inspired civil rights protests as well as numerous works of art, film, and music. That was Medgar Evers. It always seems like we're fighting for a cause or trying to champion a cause that leads to our freedom. But, you know, that's what we do. History shows that we are innovators, creators, delegators, negotiators, and emotional creatures. We are not monsters like we are portrayed to be, and there is proof documented of that. Also, I want to give out that call-in number one more time because I said I was going to do it more than three times this week. That is 347-994-3320. And now we are going to move along into Egypt, the Fifth Dynasty. We're going to start there right quick. The Fifth Dynasty of ancient Egypt is often combined with Dynasties 3, 4, and 5 under the group title of the Old Kingdom. The Fifth Dynasty pharaohs reigned approximately 150 years from the early 25th century B.C. until mid-24th B.C. It's a lot of rulers here. I'm learning to learn these names. I am. These names are incredibly hard to pronounce. But the pharaoh that founded this dynasty, his name was Userkaf. And in the papyrus Westcar, which was written during the Middle Kingdom, it tells a story about how King Khufu of Dynasty 4 was given a prophecy that triplets born to his wife would overthrow him, and he tried to kill him. But, you know, that's an urban legend. It sounds like a good lifetime movie or a good story. During this dynasty, Egyptian religions made several important changes. The earliest known copies of funerary prayers inscribed on royal tombs, known as pyramid texts, appear. The cult of the god Ra gains added importance, and kings from Userkaf to Menkaure built temples dedicated to Ra at or near Abusir. Then, late in this dynasty, the cult of the deity Osiris assumes importance, notably in the inscriptions found in the tomb of Unas. Now, this is the Fifth Dynasty, and as with most of these dynasties that I'm coming across, I'm finding that there's a lot of stuff that isn't saved properly. I'm not even going to say saved properly. It isn't historically. You got too many people, too many scholars, quote unquote, arguing over what's right and what's wrong. It's the information is subjective, but knowledge is still power. Maybe I'll say something that inspires somebody to go out and attempt to find out for themselves. Anyway. Manetho assigns 248 years of rule to the Fifth Dynasty. However, pharaohs of this dynasty more probably ruled for approximately 150 years. Like I said, these estimates, these people go back and forth on what time was. I wish it was some way that when Napoleon went to Egypt or he went to blow the nose and lips off the Sphinx, that I wish it was some way that somebody would have kept the record. There's a video on YouTube you should go watch if you're ever curious about what the nose on the Sphinx looked like. You should definitely, it's called White Man Tells the Truth YouTube. And it's a white guy named Dr. Joel Freeman, excuse me. I'm going to stop saying the word white. There's a Caucasian. I don't know if that's any better, but there's a Caucasian that is talking about the First Dynasty, the Second Dynasty, and the Third Dynasty. And then he talks all the way up until Napoleon invades Egypt and blows the nose off the Sphinx, nose and lips. A lot of statues in Egypt are missing noses and lips. There's a reason for that. But this artist accompanied Napoleon to Egypt and he drew the Sphinx before they blew the nose off. So if anyone's listening is ever just curious about that, his name is Joel A. Freeman, and that video is called, and the video is called, White Man Speaks the Truth YouTube. Right? The Sixth Dynasty. The Sixth Dynasty of ancient Egypt constitute the Old Kingdom of the Dynastic Egypt. Known pharaohs of the Sixth Dynasty served for about 203 regal years, but, you know, like I said, once again, they go back and forth on scholars and Egyptologists, which I didn't know was a word until recently. They go back and forth, and they don't really they don't really keep track of these records properly. One guy says this, one guy says that. It's like both guys have the elephant. One has them by the tail, one has them by the trunk, and they're both saying it's something different. The estimates always vary between the scholars and the source. Now, I did see a couple of names I could pronounce. Keti. he has the pyramid at Teti at Saqqara. Saqqara, excuse me. He had three queens, which goes to show you once again, you know, marriage is a Western or European construct. I'm not downing it. I'm just stating the facts. Pepi I, he was originally Merimni, and he has the pyramid of Pepi I in South Saqqara, and he had a lot. He had like seven wives, which is incredible. Like, wow, you know, he's a king. Anyway, Teti is identified as the first king of the Sixth Dynasty. After the conclusion of the reign of Unas, he ascended to the throne in the 23rd century BC. He is, you know, mentioned in this book called The Royal Canon of Turin. It gives an unlikely source of 7 months, but, you know, I have to do my own digging when I read these things. I don't want to report anything I've written as fact. I want to just say, do your own research, because like I said, these people go back and forth on when what started and who reigned, and, you know, they get some of it right. They agree on some, they disagree on others, as anybody, you know, you can whisper something to somebody at the back of a room, and by the time it gets to the front, it's totally different. But I digress. Teti had his daughter married to one of his advisors and later chief priest, Merikarua, a clear sign of his interest in cooperating with the noble class. He was buried in he was buried close to Teti's pyramid. He made sure that this guy went with him in death, but he had a lavish tomb. Teti issued a decree exempting the temple at Abydos from taxation. Wow, that's kind of like they're not taxing churches, right? He was the first ruler to be closely associated with the cult of Hathor at Dendera. So, he commissioned the construction of a pyramid. See, all of these kings commissioned pyramids to be constructed in their honor. Hey, man, that's some boss king level type shit, right? Like, I don't know any celebrity walking around with their own pyramid. I don't know any politician. Now, great, yeah, we have monuments, and that's cool and all, but these guys would get other people to carve these things for them to be buried in. This is incredible. Like, how many pyramids existed that we don't know about? The most notable member of this dynasty was Pepi, who is credited with a reign of 94 years. And nobility did start to rise. People with bread started to come up, man. I mean, they was plotting against each other. You know, like, I did see a seated statue. It's in a the Petrie Museum of Egypt Archaeology. It's in London. Because, of course, when serial killers kill people, they take their shit and keep it as trophies. It's a joke. Don't take it seriously. It's just an observation I made once. The death of the long-lived Pepi was entrenched enough to resist the authority of many of his successors, which may have contributed to the rapid decline of the old kingdom. That is the summary of the Sixth Dynasty. Kings built pyramids to die in. They built lavish, and they buried their homies with them. And then all of a sudden, in the sixth period of Egypt, people with money just started coming out the woodwork, thinking their money could buy them stuff. And in some cases, it did. It bought one guy a tomb right next to the king. I don't know anybody around now that's putting up pyramids like that, man. Like, that's some top dog boss level shit. All right, that is the fifth and sixth dynasty. I will get back on track with those as of tomorrow when I cover the seventh and eighth dynasty, and my schedule will resume. Yesterday just was a small interruption. I want to talk about a book I read called On Tyranny, and it's a good read for anybody who likes to read like I do. Spoiler alert, I do read books. Most people just think I'm supposed to be an athlete because I'm large and I'm a male of African origin. You know, I look like an offensive lineman made the Madden cover. So that's what people automatically think when they see, and they're surprised when I say, no, I went to school for engineering. But I digress. I read On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century, and it's a book written by Timothy Snyder. And he described in this book how tyrants have dismantled 20th century republics and replaced them with totalitarian regimes, and how these threats still exist to a democracy today, including in America currently. Dr. Snyder was a Yale professor of European history, and his short book details the methods of Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin, and we all know what they contributed to the human race. A tyrant will propose that a mythical era of past national greatness can be revived and that only he can achieve it. Now, what does that sound like to most people listening to the sound of my voice? I do think that there was a guy a couple of years ago that came out and said he wanted to make a certain nation great again. A would-be tyrant will propose that a mythical era of past national greatness can be revived, and only he can achieve it. He then relies on the willingness of an otherwise free people to put themselves under his authority, using lies and distortion, along with ridicule, intimidation, and force against his opponent. The tyrant tightens his grip on the country. Finally, a disaster or emergency provides him with the excuse he needs to take total control of the nation and eradicate personal liberties. That is exactly what is going on today. A disaster or emergency provides him with the excuse he needs. Threats to democracy haven't ended with the defeat of Hitler at all. Even in today's America, the danger is real, given the current president's use of lies, denunciations, and threats, behaviors that resemble those used by Hitler, and more recently by Putin in Russia, who we all know he's buddy-buddy with, or he just loves the guy. I don't know. Snyder's lessons can be grouped into five broad categories. The first is an argument against unconscious compliance and submission to tyranny. He notes that tyrants first gained power through elections and then gradually increased their control over the political system through tacit consent of the citizens. Secondly, Snyder addresses civil servants. Third, the author describes verifiable truth as the ultimate enemy of tyrants, including investigative journalism. Next, he emphasizes the importance of building relationships both within communities and across international borders. And finally, the ways tyrants may manipulate their citizens into genuinely supporting their actions, most notably through the use of catastrophic events to justify a choice between freedom and slavery. Safety, not slavery. Oh, gosh. Throughout the book, he urges vigilance and constant involvement in the democratic process. Now, the guy that wrote this book is a historian who has a background in the Holocaust, but he makes many comparisons between Trump and Adolf Hitler, the early days in power. Think about that for a minute. One of the most evil people to ever live draws comparisons to a guy who is in charge of, quote unquote, the freest nation in the world or something like that. We used to be a superpower. Now I think we're like third on that list. Maybe not. I know we're not first. We used to be the superpower of the world. Anyway, I'm not going to say everything about the book. I do suggest that most people watch out for these traps that people are setting. And, you know, we already see that dictators induce professionals to abandon their codes of conduct ducks and aid him in his work, because you see how the Republicans just rush to his side and do whatever he say and back him no matter what he does. This is a real scary time in this country. It is. It also requires that people protect their privacy from political snoops, gain perspective from those who live in different countries, and stay alert for telltale words like exception, extremism, and terrorism. I want to plug that book again, On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century. It's definitely a book any alert person should read. My brother told me you can be woke and still in the bed, and seeing how knowledge is power, I suggest that you arm yourself so that you actually know what's going on by reading this book. I read this book, and it totally lines up with what's going on today. I'm not saying go out and fight anything. I'm just saying you better have the knowledge ready, because the people, tyrants, they are at work. and they are trying to get as much as they can before they close the doors on everyone else. Once again, I want to plug that book, and I want to invite anyone who may read this book to come on my show and share their opinion with me. That call-in number one more time is 347-994-3320. On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century by Timothy Snyder. And next, but certainly not least, a book called Everyone is African, How Science Explodes the Myth of Race. And it provides scientific data that proves that we're all Africans. Let's take a moment and think about the horrific pain and suffering in history brought on by racism and bigotry. The guy that wrote the book, Daniel J. Fairbanks, is the dean of a College of Science and Health in Utah Valley. He's a research geneticist. In one quick punch in this book, he knocks out the presumption that the white race is superior to other ethnicities. The world's human diversity consists of large numbers and genetic variations, which are put in play through pigmentation, human health, and intelligence. He goes on to back up the claim that racism is not just ethnically wrong. It has no basis in science. So the fact that people that look like me are oppressed against because we look different or may appear scarier to some other people has no basis in science. The same science that tells us that climate change is real. And by the way, for anybody listening, these hurricane season got upgraded from like 5 to 9 hurricanes, and they're going to be stronger. So if you don't believe it, science is science. Anyway, 42% of Americans fully reject human evolution. And for Christian fundamentalists and others, learning that everyone is African is the worst news possible. But I'm going to rejoice. But another sign of spiritual power through unity and connections at work. That is what I'm going to do. He relates human diversity to health issues, sickle cell anemia, and how it confers protection against malaria, which is why we don't get malaria, which, of course, that was, you know, sickle cell was an evolutionary thing for those of African descent. There's a hypothesis that Europeans used fermentation to purify drinking water, so over time they became more tolerant to alcohol compared to Chinese and Japanese who boiled water. It's a hypothesis, but it's an interesting one. The perceptions of race are covered in a wrap-up chapter that looks at the geologically modern history of the European diaspora and the prejudices that consequently arose. This book is called a socio-political book. This is dealing with some socio-economic things. You know, it dealt with the fact that people try to measure intelligence based on color, or race, as the Spanish Inquisition called it. There's a huge void in understanding, and this is the heart of the problem behind this quote-unquote racism. You know, this guy Daniel Fairbanks had my attention, and I recommend this book to anyone who wants to further the knowledge on race. I would like to thank all of you for listening to me today. Go out and get those books. Everyone is African and On Tyranny. Like, share, subscribe, comment, criticize. I didn't really expect to call it a day, but I will be glad to have one next time. Thursdays at 6:30 p.m. Jeremy Speaks on Everything. That'll be happening Tuesdays and Thursdays, but Thursday is the call-in day. I'll be doing the Ancient Dynasties of Egypt tomorrow. Thank you to all my listeners. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Feel free to give me a call. Peace.
Gorilla Tech. active, it's time for warfare. Yo, we came to battle, yo, we aim to kill.